So at 7 metres out, Australia needs to try to win the game. Cobain takes the line out. Australia trying to drive ahead. Gregan again. And Larkham. Kefu. Tai Kefu! Did he get it? That's the match winner! That is the match winner! Kefu will never score a more important try. And look at the Wallaby players. That is the great result they wanted. It's a heartbreak for the All Blacks.
Here we are back with another episode of the Running Rugby Podcast. Just Archie and Toby here for you tonight, and it's... the time is finally here, the Rugby Championship 2022. We've obviously seen these teams to win their series against our Northern Hemisphere compatriots and to go down. Yes, the Wallabies and All Blacks still reeling away after losses to England and Ireland in that final third test. And these guys start to face off, and it's all overseas, all abroad these first 2 weeks. The Wallabies spending 2 weeks in Argentina while the All Blacks spend 2 weeks in South Africa. Bit of a difference from the last couple of years where everything's been more or less Australian-based. But the big news, Wallabies camp was struck by another injury blow, a big injury blow. Samu Karevi, ACL, while out with the Commonwealth Games men's team. This is gutting for Rennie's men here.
Yeah, probably the most critical piece to our team at the moment, the most impactful and one of the worst injuries, I guess, that you could have as a player. So, you know, obviously he'd be hugely disappointed, but I think this is a huge oversight by Rugby Australia to actually allow him to go and try and play at the Commonwealth Games and prioritise that over the first couple of games of the Rugby Championship. I think, you know, there was always that risk that he could get injured. And now, I mean, he could have done this in the Argentina game, you never know. But I just find it really frustrating that he was given that opportunity when we're in the midst of an international season. And I know they're probably trying to keep him happy, but yeah, it just feels like it's mismanagement by Rugby Australia. And now we're left down another man in the squad.
Yeah, tough decision, really. I do agree with you. It's hard to see the thinking behind it, especially when we didn't exactly have a sevens team that was likely going to be challenging for that gold medal. It seemed like they'd had a couple of good results this year, but I don't feel like we're really on the same level as, say, the Fijian sevens double gold Olympic gold medalists or the South African Blitzbocker that end up winning this one in the final.
Yeah, and I think, look, it's absolutely fine to let a player like Mark Nawonga Nitawase get over there. Even some of the guys from Australia, if that was kind of in there, you know, if they fit the skill set that was required, I think that's a great opportunity for them. But for a guy like Samu Karevi, who, you know, he is just someone we need to be playing game in, game out for us to be winning. And I think Rennie, you know, whether he was happy about this, I don't know either, but yeah, it's really come back to bite them. And this could really hurt our chances at being competitive in the Rugby Championship.
Yeah. And I mean, it's hard to say what actually effect it could have. Obviously wouldn't have been there anyway for these first two games, but it's gonna sting even more if we drop a couple of these games to Argentina. The other news while we've been away is obviously the All Blacks coaching shuffle. While Ian Foster does remain in there as the head coach, surprising many, many people. Both his assistants have been let go. So Plumtree and Brad Moa leaving while they brought in Jason Bryan coming up from the Crusaders. So not the Crusaders coach that they wanted, just one of his assistants. And him with Joe Schmidt taking a bit more of an active role in the coaching of this team as well.
Yeah, and funny Joe Schmidt gets that further opportunity given he was just a stand-in when Foster had COVID. They've obviously realised that he does have a lot to offer as someone who's very experienced, but I don't see him as the future. So I almost see this as more of a distraction for someone like Foster. I don't think he needs necessarily that support, and it could be just too many cooks spoil the broth, I think, a bit. Jason Ryan, I think he's obviously a great assistant, and maybe he'll be giving the inside word to Razor Robinson when he gets into camp.
Well, let's talk about this first game. Obviously, South Africa hosting New Zealand. Wherever is it? I've got it down as Mbombela Stadium, but I'm not exactly sure whereabouts that is. Toby, do you know?
So it's one of the stadiums that was constructed because of the FIFA World Cup in South Africa. Northeastern South Africa. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen them play in this stadium before, from an international perspective at least. Usually they're somewhere like, you know, in Cape Town playing at Newlands or something, but maybe that's there any sort of construction going on there. I'm not sure, but yeah, a bit of a different one here.
Yeah,
particularly for such a big game. That's, you know, maybe that's giving other people that normally wouldn't get to see these types of games the opportunity to get there, but definitely not your classic South African rugby stadium.
And we've seen the teams for these two being announced already just this evening. So initial thoughts, let's start with the All Blacks, Toby. Initial thoughts, a few changes here, a few changes in the front row with Takiaho and Tarvao coming back into the starting lineup. Retallick, fractured cheekbone from that last Irish game, is out, with Barrett coming back in. And Caleb Clark makes his return after 2 years in the wilderness, replacing Severice on one wing.
Yeah, look, I think if you're relying on Angus Tarvao as a starting tight head, I think you've got some big issues there from a depth perspective. As a squad member, I'm still a little bit sceptical on his abilities, but if he's starting, that's not promising for them. Samson Takiaho is a good player. I think he's pretty capable. But I'm really not liking the back row at the moment. I think Ioane is not really the type of player they need there at six. Sevilla, I believe, probably should be playing seven, and that would open up maybe an opportunity for someone like a Hoskins Satutu or something. I think they need a bit of a shake-up. The Barrett combinations there as well. I think Bowden Barrett should be making way for Richie, and I'd be putting Will Jordan at fullback for Geordie. So there's a few changes I'd be making. Havili, I like. I think his combination with Maunga would be perfect. Don't think he has necessarily that same cohesion with Barrett. And again, Rico Ioane at outside centre. It's a similar story. Like, I feel like Foster isn't learning his lesson.
Yeah, put good Hewitt into 13. If you want Ioane there, put him on the wing while Jordan shifts to fullback. I agree as well. And like, it's really disappointing to see like Satutu is just not getting another chance. Because they're not willing to move Savea out of that eight position. And so you've now had Satutu as well as Peter Gasuakula that's dropped out of the squad completely.
Ridiculous.
Who had like a really good showing in his sort of performances for the All Blacks. It just feels like there's a lack of as you say, he hasn't learned his lessons from these oversights of what happened in the Irish series.
Yeah, exactly. And again, going back to that prop position, you got Tyrell Lomax, another prop that's spent some time in Australia playing for the Rebels. I think him and Tava, they're just not up to standard from an All Blacks perspective at that tight head spot. I think Ethan de Groot has some promise, and George Bauer I've been pretty impressed with. But look, I'd be trying to jam as many Crusaders into that team as possible. And yeah, I think he's just picking some guys that carry a fair bit of risk. And at this point in time, with the amount of pressure on him, I'd be going for some safer picks and be looking, you know, for maybe some more conservative options in some ways. But yeah, look, I'm a bit worried for them here. I would say that South Africa at home surely should be favourites.
And looking at their team, like it's not hard to see why. Like this is very, very getting very close to sort of their top level team. Faf de Klerk comes back in after being sort of demoted to either out of the 23 or to the bench in the last couple of games for Hendrikse, which moves onto the bench. Devin Willemse, who obviously was having a good series against Wales, holds onto that 15 jersey. And young sort of Arensa comes in for Cheslin Colby on the wing, who's also injured, but another sort of pint-sized winger, very quick lightning on his feet. We'll be hoping to make some inroads against some of the, after some of his big men sort of punch a hole through the middle of this All Blacks team.
Yeah, and look, it does have a bit of a flavour from that 2019 World Cup. There's still a lot of names that were present in that 23-man squad that was going around at that point in time. But I like how experienced it is. It's a settled lineup in terms of those combinations. I think these guys are very, very familiar with playing with one another. And there's a bit of injection of youth throughout. But, you know, I think overall they've got good depth off the bench. Quagga Smith, Mostert, they're quite, you know, nimble players to come on in their positions. You got LaRue that can bring some, you know, some poise there at the back when he comes on. And some really handy props as well, Vincent Koch and Stephen Kitsoff. Mm-hmm. From what I could see here, they're going to really try and bash the All Blacks, throw them off their game a bit and hopefully chip away with the penalties, I would say, and then maybe some lucky tries in there as well, some skillful tries in the back line. I think that they're set, you know, for a victory. I think New Zealand are going to continue to struggle under this pressure that's mounting on them.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this before seeing these teams out there, and I was like, I think like there's going to be a lot of pressure on New Zealand, but they're just the sort of team that doesn't lose like in this many times in a row, like three times in a row. Then it's going to be right, almost yeah. unheard of in All Blacks history. But looking at these teams, I'm sort of like, oh, maybe I'm wrong. In South Africa, with this sort of team, and as you say, you're not a fan so much of the backline. I'm not a fan of the forward pack that much of the All Blacks. I just feel like they are vulnerable here, and so yeah, I have to be picking the Springboks to win this one. I'm sure it will be tight, but you got to think they'll take it.
Yeah, and I had a similar thought pattern to you in terms of the third game against Ireland. I thought, you know, sure, the All Blacks lost the second game, but this is what they do. They come back and they win well and they'll win the series, and that didn't happen. And so those cracks really started to show after that performance. You know, they could come out here and correct things and everyone will go, well, what were we thinking? They are a great team still, and they are back on the right path. But a loss here would do a lot of damage to their reputation, or further damage to their reputation globally. And it may force administration into a coaching change before the end of the tournament, which, you know, is that something they can afford to do? It's going to be difficult when they're overseas. Do they just stand him down and look to the assistants? I can't see them not making a change if the All Blacks lose both these games in South Africa. Maybe if they go 1-1, you know, maybe they just keep plodding along and accept that maybe South Africa are going to be the favourites to win the rugby championship. But a couple of losses.
That's it. Puts us in a good position questions.
Yeah, and puts us in a really good position later in the year to have a real crack at them. And that's why, again, going back to Karevi, I'm really disappointed that he's not going to be around, because I thought this is a great opportunity this year with the All Blacks under the pump to, you know, a bit of a weird fixture in Melbourne on a Thursday. Maybe you upset them and then you get over to Eden Park and make some history over there. It's frustrating from a Wallabies perspective. But with the focus on the All Blacks, I think South Africa can really use that in their favour. They've been a team in the past that really look to get a mental edge over their opponents in any way they can. They really do their homework. And I'm no Rassi, or be in the background there with a few little clever things that he'll be looking at for them to employ against the All Blacks. I think it's going to be an entertaining game. And like you say, Archie, it'll probably be close, but let's see what happens here.
Absolutely. That kicks off at 1 a.m. Australian time, 3 a.m. Kiwi time, as we said, in that sort of slightly obscure stadium. So a bit of a new look to see these two teams make that clash. Look, let's jump to that Argentina-Wallabies game. Definitely sort of the backup performance to what is the main show in terms of Springboks All Blacks this weekend. But a lot to show here, especially with Checker coaching the Pumas up against his former team. Will be a lot of passion, especially in South America, with this one. This kicks off at 5 a.m. Australian time, 7 a.m. Kiwi time as well. And Tobes, we've had a bit of an inkling of what's going to happen in terms of the team. Take us through what do you know? What have your tips show?
Well, from what I've read, I mean, if you're looking at the back line, I get the sense we'll see Quade Cooper at 10. And I think Nick White should keep his position. Hunter Paisami seems to have the inside running and inside center to replace Samu Karevi. You know, partnering with Ikitau, I think, is a pretty good combination. Hunter has a bit of ball playing ability. I would have really liked to see Irei Simoni get an opportunity here. But you've got to think, he was born to the squad late. Hunter's obviously been preferred in the past. And I think he'll do the job. And particularly in defence, he'll hit really hard, which is great for us. Hearing Pateas on the wing with Marika, obviously. And then Tom Wright gets his opportunity at fullback, which I think is great.
Yeah, sounding like a good good reaction. And the other news that we sort of heard is Jed Holloway was initially touted that he'd make his debut back in that first England test. Picked up an injury in training, but it looks like he's back fit and healthy. And it sounds like he's going to get the start at six here this weekend. So you'd assume that it'd be Holloway, Hooper and Valentini, 6, 7, 8 there. They're thinking potentially it'll be Darcy, Swain and Phillip in the second row. And unfortunately, Parecki still under concussion cloud, and they've actually flown in Billy Pollard, the young Brumbies hooker who was playing for Australia A in his cover, but probably means Falau Fainga gets a start with one of the other Brumbies. So we've got three Brumbies hookies there, so it'll either be Pollard, but most likely Lachlan Lonergan on the bench there.
Yeah, and I think Fainga, look, I really like him around the park. I think he's a quality player, but he needs to get his throws right and obviously keep his discipline as well. So, yeah, disappointed to see Phillip, I think, starting again. I'd love to see Rory Arnold come back in, and maybe it's too soon for that. He probably doesn't quite have the conditioning for the international standard right now, but I'm sure we'll see more of him once we hit the Springboks games. You know, and that back row is pretty strong. I think Jed will be raring to go, gets his first opportunity for the Wallabies, which is, I think, a great achievement for him, given it's a bit later in his career. And obviously he could slot into second row as well, but for his size, probably six is a better position for him at an international level. And it does really strengthen our line out. So I think with Matt Phillip running the show there, Darcy Swain, obviously good in the line out, great at maul time, and Jed just doing some hard running through the middle and some big hits. I think that's a pretty good balance within the forwards. And I think CO's missing, isn't he? I think.
Yeah.
And
CO gone. And
Bell.
Bell gone. So we're looking like Matt Gibbon probably we'll see on the bench.
With so Slipper and Taniela starting?
Yeah, likely it seems that way. Depending
and
then on
Gibbon and who else do we have?
Alalatoa.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's okay. I've heard that, you know, from what I've read as well, Leota and Samu on the bench.
Yeah, a bit of a 6-2 split on the bench, it's sounding like as well.
Yeah, which interesting to see that. You know, they're going to put Hodge there at 23, covering a few different spots. Really want to see more of Vunivalu. I wouldn't be disappointed if Pataya was left out entirely and Vunivalu got his opportunity to start. Mm. Obviously not quite willing to do that yet, but I think his time will come pretty soon. I think Australia should have enough to win against the Pumas. I know it's always difficult in Argentina, but we got two wins against them last year. And although that was in Australia, I think that, you know, like even the checker factor is going to play a part in all this. And Checker is familiar with a lot of these players from an Australian perspective. But I think the quality of our team, we should be good enough to get over the top of them. We have a pretty good record against Argentina overall in the last 7 years. We've only lost them twice. There's been a couple of draws in there in 2021. But our record against them is overall pretty strong. But you can never underestimate, I guess, that checker factor of getting his team that hyped up, that focused and primed to play, to perform at their best, particularly when, you know, he'll be kind of I guess, looking back in the past to the things that maybe they've said about the teams and, you know, chatting in their ear and saying like, boys, look, they don't really respect you or whatever, and really saying whatever he has to get them motivated. And they've got some big boys that are mobile, so they'll definitely be looking to put some painful hits on us.
What's the key, like one key area you're really looking at in this one that you think is going to help decide the way this game goes?
I think discipline, honestly. In that sort of environment, they'll be looking to get a reaction out of us, I think, in certain ways. Like having someone like Fainga out there, if he's starting, he could be someone that they target. Even I'm sure Darcy's learned his lesson, but there's a few guys there I think you could get under their skin. But I think if you play that line, if you play that sort of aggressive game where you're really pushing the boundaries, that could mean that you get kind of reffed out of the game a little bit. So Argentina will need to control their passion. But I think, you know, Australia, I think, is the cleverer team. We have better strategies in place. I think our set piece will be better than theirs. And we've got some great finishes as well. I think it's going to be a real tough battle through the forwards. But I think overall, our back line should be classy enough to get it done. And hopefully Quaid can really pull some strings and get everyone working together with some intricate backline moves.
Yeah, very excited to see Quaid back there for sure. I think it does help sort of settle us there, and especially in, as you say, an environment that can be a bit overwhelming. Very glad they went with Quaid. But I agree, discipline's a massive thing here. Just looking back, like five of the last seven, like we've been the heavier hit in terms of penalised team. And usually it's not just by one or two, it's by sort of four, five, six sort of extra penalties and opportunities we're giving to the opposition. So absolutely want to see disciplined team, good, strong hits, hard hits, but legal hits, and no silly penalties at the breakdown as well.
I think we just really do need to match their physicality, which we didn't do all the time in the England series. I think that's something we really need to start strong with. And yeah, look, I want to see Tanny Ellis step up again. I think he had been a little bit off his best.
Couple of games, yeah.
I want to see some big scrums from him early on, some big carries, you know, like get back to what he does best. I think that if we can get close to their line, if we can kick into the corners, and maybe that's going to be something Hodge will be doing at the end, kind of kicking right into the corners, taking the long penalties where necessary. But I think our maul could be a real strength as well, as we've kind of seen over the last few games. We are definitely improving from a set-piece perspective and also a mauling perspective. Dave Parecki was a big part of that. We didn't lose a line-out in the last English test. Fainga, obviously, you know, he's had his troubles at points in time. But I'd back him to be good enough to keep us in the game from that perspective. And, yeah, I'm just excited to see the veterans in White and Quaid really drive the team around. I think they're going to be really integral to our success.
And what's your result? What's your margin, you reckon?
I'd say Wallabies by seven, seven or less. I don't think it's going to be a big scoreline on our part. You know, Rennie really needs a good win. Solid win. So even if it isn't sort of comprehensive on the scoreboard, I think he just wants to see a really positive and strong performance and not one that drops off at the end. And don't leave it all to the second half. Like we've seen the last few times where we've kind of started to turn things around too late in the game. I think we need to get ahead early and hold on to that lead. So yeah, I'm backing them to be successful. Yeah, I think we need this win, and Rennie wants to get his winning percentage back up to scratch. I think he'll turn it around, but we'll see. We'll have to see. This is going to be a big game, I think.
Bookies agree Checker with your margin. So it's 6.5 from them. Yeah, Checker versus Rennie. I don't want to get into this, but how many more chances do you think Rennie gets if we have a very bad showing in this rugby championship? Is there any chance that he gets replaced before the World Cup?
I don't think there's a strong chance of that happening, even if he was to say from here on, even if he only won 50% of his games,
mm-hmm.
I think if you look at the opponents we're going to come up against, that's probably quite reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, if his percentage overall sits in that sort of 40s, I think that's acceptable for now. If there was an opportunity to get Scott Robertson, though, for next year, do you try and pounce on that and beat the All Blacks to the punch?
And he said,
I think it's a little bit harsh on Rennie, but
teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He will take his opportunity if he thinks he's getting snubbed for too long by the All Blacks. He'll take his opportunity. And the Wallabies are a team that are going to look after you. Like, yeah, you don't have the playing stock necessarily, but I think Rennie's shown that you can make it work with those franchises, bringing the top talent from each of the five franchises.
Yep.
You can really pull together a good team if you don't have too many injuries. I think the injuries this year have really hit us pretty hard. But, yeah, I think Rennie deserves to get through to the end of the World Cup next year. But if he does, you know, say he drops one out of two of these games and then loses all four to New Zealand and South Africa, and we go on tour and we have a pretty unsuccessful tour, then maybe they'll be forced into making that change, a bit like the All Blacks. But I think our threshold for we're going to be a lot more tolerant, I would say, towards some unsuccessful results, some poor results, because I think they know Rennie is a good coach, and I think they'll back him to really build into the World Cup next year.
I tend to agree. I just, want to see the question because, obviously seeing what's happened in New Zealand under Foster starts to see how much that itch sort of starts to come up with a couple of losses.
And the good thing is, I think longer term, if we are looking post 2023, regardless of the result, you know, obviously if we win the tournament and Rennie's still there, he's going to stay on probably, but we got some good young coaches or relatively young coaches in the wings and Stephen Larkham, Simon Cronin, who could be an option even though he's a Kiwi. I wouldn't say that Brad Thorne's probably in the reckoning, but there are definitely some guys there. Even Dan McKellar possibly could be a guy to come through into that head coaching role for the Wallabies. So I think longer term for the next decade or so, we're pretty well set up for some guys that can come and really thrive in that position. And I think they are keen to bring in an Australian where they can. And that's probably the logic behind talking to Eddie Jones. But yeah, look, you got to take your opportunities when they come. If Scott Robertson's there and we're going terribly, they'll definitely consider it. I'm sure they'll have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Interesting to see. All right, Toad, let's leave it there for this week. Make sure everyone, you are catching up with us on our social media, on Instagram at Running Rugby Podcast or Twitter at Running Rugby Pod, and liking and subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts. We'll be watching this first round and be back with all the reviews and see what state of affairs we are faced with coming into round two of the Rugby Championship. But for this weekend, keep on running.
Run.